98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
We're live from the Oxygen Community Studios on this Friday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Friday. You know we always appreciate it. And it's Friday. We should all be celebrating the end of the week, getting ready to do fun stuff. We got that cool rejoiner music coming in. Everything seems like it's in a good place, Gambo. And then you get to our top story of the day today. Top story of the day today is that we're not in a good place with our top story of the day because for the fourth time now, there has been a coach who has departed ASU football since the scandal broke last summer. The scandal about ASU hosting recruits during a period during which they were not allowed to, perhaps paying for those recruits to come here during a time in which they were not allowed to. The latest coach to pay for it was Zach Hill, their offensive coordinator, who, you know, just a couple days ago, Brian Billick, the former NFL coach, was brought in here as an offensive consultant. And Gambo, as you've reported a few times today, there's no indication at all that Brian Billick's going to be the offensive coordinator.
No.
It's now of the 10 coaches who are on this staff right before the season began last year, four of them now are off the staff, including the three guys who were suspended at the beginning of the last year. And you start to add it up, and it is certainly fair to wonder at what point are they going to come get Antonio Pierce, and can Herm Edwards really, truly survive all of this chaos in his program?
Yeah, I think Herm can survive, and it depends on how you say survive. Is survive, he stays on as coach, that might be survival. Like, there's going to be punishment to ASU. I would imagine there are loss of scholarships and there's a bowl ban and, you know, who knows what else. I don't know if they go as far as firing Herm. They've had 6-7 months to investigate. They put three coaches on administrative leave. They did everything. And then these coaches were basically, they received letters a couple of weeks ago from ASU attorneys that they were going to either have to resign or be fired. And now you've got the Zach Hill. After more time to investigate, he decided the writing was on the wall, I think, and he decided to move on. I think that Antonio Pierce is probably going to get the axe too at some point. I would imagine that guy, he took him off the recruiting trail 6-7 months ago. He hasn't been put back on the recruiting trail. I imagine that eventually the axe is going to come down on him. But with Herm, I think it's a little different. You just got to wonder how much level of protection is there. If Herm was not involved in bringing these recruits in, well, there is a level of responsibility because this is his staff. But did he knowingly arrange for a recruit to visit during a pandemic or a down period? And if he didn't, I think he'll survive. And I don't think there's any indication that he knowingly did that. Now, staff did, and ultimately, what you've said several times is right. He's going to be somewhat responsible for that, but that may not be, oh my God, he's fired. You got to get rid of him.
Yeah, and how, you know, survive, you're right. That's a real loose term. It could cover all sorts of manners of sins, you know, in terms of does he resign because he senses that something is coming down the pike and he wants to spare, you know, Ray Anderson, his friend, the embarrassment of having to fire him, or maybe even Ray Anderson having to lose his job over the course of all this. Survive, maybe it's the wrong word, but you're right. There's all sorts of different ways that this could fall out. Doug Haller, who covers ASU football and has done a really good job covering ASU football for a number of years, he writes for The Athletic. And it's long, but I want to read this to you because there's a lot here in a story that he just published about an hour ago or so. He writes, after ASU's win over rival Arizona, Ray Anderson told the team in the locker room that Edwards would return for a fifth season. Anderson never made this announcement publicly, nor has he made himself available to the media much since the NCAA investigation began. But as more staff changes are made, it may be hard for ASU to justify keeping the man in charge. Although sources indicate Pierce was behind the bulk of the alleged violations, several sources have told The Athletic that Edwards was aware of what was going on during the pandemic dead period. The head coach may not have known about every weekend visit, but if a high-profile target was on campus, Pierce got Edwards involved, the sources say. This might speak more to ASU's culture under Edwards than the allegations themselves. One former staffer, and then I'll finish, I want you to comment on this.
Yeah.
One former staffer said that regard for the rules within the program, quote, wasn't really a thing, close quote. Another said that even if Edwards wasn't involved in the pandemic allegations, it was his job to know. When you become a head football coach in college, you're the CEO of the program,
yep.
a college football source said. You're responsible to know everything, period.
Yeah.
Close
now,
quote.
It's just a matter of this, again, I mean,
did they have proof of that?
Did Herm arrange for any of the visits? Because they have a thing in the NCAA, they call it a bump. A chance meeting with a recruit that wasn't organized by the coach. Happens all the time. A coach may bump into a recruit or something happens, and the NCAA just calls it a bump. I mean, you know, there's levels to this, right? I mean, was it just, hey, Herm, I got this guy in, you're not aware that you're doing any recruiting violation. Oh, hi, how are you? But if you didn't arrange it, they might consider that a bump. But if there was a number of them, and, like, you've got to know the rules. You're the head coach.
Sure.
You're responsible for the staff. I do think that the axe is going to fall on Antonio Pierce. I mean, again, 6-7 months, the guy hasn't been allowed to recruit. I think eventually, I think it's going to be hard for him to survive. I think what, you know, for Herm, it's, you know, there's a lot of people that I spoke with who just don't believe that he was involved at the level of organizing it. But, you know, to your point, I'll continue to say it, like, you know, you are responsible.
Yeah.
You're ultimately responsible. And I think that's why there will be some punishment for ASU and for Herm. But as far as did Herm organize any of that? Was he, you know, really deeply involved in that? That will come out when this investigation is over.
Yeah, and until I get it, until we know that, it's hard to speculate on it. It's so you talk about a bump. I mean, if we're in the middle of a period where no recruits were supposed to be on campus anyway, then how can you justify bumping into one, right? Oh, hey, Herm, look, this guy, hey, look, come say hi to Billy Johnson. He's in from wherever. And in Herm's mind, he should be thinking, well, wait a minute, we're in the middle of a dead period. That guy shouldn't even be here. Why is he here? There shouldn't be a bump in the middle of a dead period. But that, let's set that off to the side for a second. The other issue that I think really complicates all of this is the very nature of the guy who could be firing Herm Edwards if it comes to that. That's Ray Anderson. Ray Anderson used to be his agent. Ray Anderson's been his friend. Ray Anderson kind of did something that the rest of the sports world, you and I especially, thought was kind of crazy when he hired Herm Edwards, right? I mean, we ripped it forever. And when we were wrong about it, at least initially when it looked like we were wrong, we said, hey, man, we were wrong. Our bad. Boy, Ray Anderson got this one right. I can't help but to wonder, and I have no knowledge about this at all, but I can't help but to wonder if part of this is that Ray Anderson, you know, is having a hard time doing what might need to be done when it comes to his friend, when it comes to the guy that he used to represent, right? Because that might reflect on him, too. That might reflect on him.
Well, of course it's going to reflect on him.
Right? I mean, man, you may
be. Ray Anderson might have a hard time with the basketball program right now and with the football program the way it is right now. I mean, there's going to be a lot of calls for Ray Anderson to eventually be gone.
No doubt. And I guess you're right. In a way, I'm kind of stating the obvious. But I think it's even exacerbated by the fact that there's not a special unique relationship between Ray Anderson and Bobby Hurley. There is between Ray Anderson and Herm Edwards, right? They go back forever. And there's a business partnership and there's a friendship there. And maybe that is muddying the waters a little bit, making it even more confusing and complicated than it actually should be. I don't know. Look, our poll question today is, do you think this time 1 year from now, Herm Edwards will be the head coach of ASU football? And 82% of our audience is saying no. If we change the question and said, do you think Herm Edwards will be the head coach of ASU football when the season starts in August, I would still vote no. I don't think he will be. I think between now and then,
too much stuff going on.
There's just
too much stuff.
It's sort of like, remember Sean Miller and how long that went on at U of A?
Yeah, and a lot of people thought that, and he kept surviving. And
right.
He survived. It was like he was a cat with nine lives.
Right, and it just kept going on.
But eventually, yeah.
Eventually, it all came out in the wash, and I have a feeling this one's, when it comes to Herm, it's all going to come out in the wash. Now, does that happen before the start of the season? I don't know. It's just a hunch. Just my guess that it will. But I don't, you know, it's just a guess at this point.
Yeah, I think at this point, we're approaching February here. Season ended, you know, they had their bowl game, I mean, not too long ago, but you would think if they had enough information on that investigation that they would say, okay, It's time to make a move. It's time to move on. Look, part of it to me could be very simply this. Who the hell are they going to hire while all of this is going on?
Oh, my God. Well, that's like, why
that's why I think Herm's going to keep his job. Let me give me 30 seconds. I think Herm keeps his job because even if – look, I think if they fired him and they want to go hire – so you want to hire somebody right now, you're going to lose scholarships. You're going to have a bowl ban. USC just hired Lincoln Riley. Good luck winning a press conference here. With like, it's a mess. It's not a good situation right now. So I think that a year from now is when Herm's gone, because I think strategically it's in the best interest of ASU to suck it up, Buttercup, go through this year, take your beating. If Antonio Pierce has to get fired, I think he will. Just go through the whole thing and then have Herm retire on his own, walk away and say, okay, and by that time you'll know what the punishments are and you start somebody fresh, not in the middle of investigation.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I got excited and I didn't mean to cut you off. I got excited because I started thinking about that as it relates to the offensive coordinator. I'm sure they've got a guy they're targeting. I wonder how good that guy is given the situation he's walking into, right? I mean, it's challenging to hire guys in a climate like that. And this offensive coordinator who's going to come in and take Zach Hill's job, is that guy, I'm sure he's qualified, but is it a great hire at that position? I would imagine those are hard to come by when you're in the middle of a scandal like this, because that's not a super appealing job.
It's, I mean, think about it. With you're a coach, like, do you want this? Might not be the job you want,
right?
Like, they're not recruiting very well right now. You've got sanctions coming very likely. It may be better off to take a beating for a year with whatever happens, coaches being dismissed, and we'll let the investigation end and let the punishment be given out, whatever that may be, and then start over with kind of a, you know, with more of a clean slate.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it is conference championship weekend in the NFL, and we start by looking ahead to the NFC game. Division rivals of the Arizona Cardinals and a streak, a couple of streaks that are actually on the line this weekend when the Rams play the 49ers. We'll tell you what they are next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Burns and Gambo. Presented by Smashburger. Every bite a better burger. Smashburger, featuring the new pulled pork tailgater. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Streak number one, you're probably very well aware of going into the NFC Championship game this weekend. Streak number two is a little bit more obscure and, quite frankly, just strange. We're not really even sure what to make of it. Streak number one, going into the Rams and the 49ers on Sunday, is that the 49ers have beaten the Rams six straight times in seven of their last 10, to the point where, in what was probably a little bit humiliating, Sean McVay was asked earlier this week, Gambo, if Kyle Shanahan's in your head. He's like, no, he's not in my head. It's just, it's what about, that's a humiliating question to have to answer when you're the home team going into this game. The other streak, and you brought this to our attention yesterday, and what it means, I have absolutely no idea. The last 18 Super Bowls, so you have to go all the way back to the Super Bowl between the Raiders and the Bucks when John Gruden was the coach. The last 18 Super Bowls have contained either Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, or the San Francisco 49ers. That weird stretch will come to an end if the Rams beat San Francisco on Sunday. I don't know what it means. That's just a very strange fact.
Boy, it is. I think it just means that enjoy this while you can, because, you know, Ben's gone and Peyton's gone and Brady could be gone. And so all that's left is really the 49ers, you know, and they'd have to go to every Super Bowl to keep that streak going. So I don't know. There's always these quirky things that are involved. And, you know, anything with Brady, because he's been there so damn many of them, you could tie stuff in. But, man, Ben, Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been to a Super Bowl since they played the Cardinals. Come on.
No, he hasn't. In fact, the NFL Network, when we were doing the first 2 hours of our show, they were replaying Ben Roethlisberger's Super Bowl win over the Cardinals. I don't know why it was on in the background. My eyes just kept getting drawn to it. I got two words for you, Gambo. Two words. Aaron Francisco. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to leave it out there. I was like watching it again going, oh, God. Aaron Francisco, you're killing me, man.
You're just killing me. Yeah. And not just because of the end zone, the play that set up the touchdown. It was like Aaron Francisco just got torched on that play. Anyway, that's ancient history. We shouldn't be talking about
that. I know, the memories. That's what Ben Roethlisberger being out of the league, maybe it's a good thing. You don't think about it. You won't think about it. It was so long ago. I mean, it was so long ago.
It was a long time ago. Let's talk about this matchup coming up this weekend.
Let's do it.
In which the Rams, the only thing that would appear to favor the 49ers in this matchup is that streak, is the fact that they've won the last six games that they've played against them. Because everything else about the Rams, the quarterback play, the way OBJ has integrated himself in the system, the way Von Miller has integrated himself in the system, everything about this matchup would seem to favor the Rams, the fact that it's in their building, except for this 6-0 record in the last six games by the Niners against the Rams. It's like the only hook for them to hang their hat on right now, it seems like.
Yeah, and listen, it's a good hook. Right?
It is.
I mean, it's in your heads. It's got to be in your heads. McVay's getting asked about it. The players know. Now, if I'm the Rams, I'm thinking two things. I'm not thinking about the dominance the 49ers have had over me. I mean, listen, the Rams were kicking their ass early in that game, too, the last game of the season. So they were beating them up pretty good. The Rams are a better team. Stafford's playing at an extremely high level. He's completed 75% of his passes in these two playoff games. Odell Beckham Jr. is a much different player than the last time they played. Von Miller has been killing it. Sacks in six straight games. So their pass rush has been tremendous. They beat the hell out of Tom Brady. Pressured the entire game. 17 times they pressured Tom Brady. You know, so I think there's a lot of good things going on for the Rams. And when I look at the 49ers, man, Jimmy Garoppolo, that offense, they didn't score any offensive touchdowns against Green Bay. They got a break because of a blocked field goal and a blocked punt. And they got a break against Dallas because Dallas is going to Dallas. So I don't know that San Francisco is playing at a high level to where I think the Rams are. Now, there's no home field advantage, as we've discussed over and over again, because of all the 49er fans that are going to be there.
Yeah.
Whether that gets in their heads again or not, I don't know. You got to try not to let it. I mean, but you got to be prepared for it. You got to be prepared for a silent count and all of those things, just in case the 49er fans just overwhelm SoFi Stadium.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So that's what I think. I think the Rams are playing at a high level. I think a lot of their key players are clicking right now. I don't think the 49ers are playing at a high level. But again, you're one win away from going to the Super Bowl, and anything can go.
Yeah. Certainly. There have been plenty of moments at this point in time in the season where a subpar quarterback has been able to elevate his level of play to get a team into the Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl. Nick Foles is the one most recently that comes to mind. Hell, Jimmy G took him to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And remember, in that 2019 NFC Championship game, and I had forgotten about this, Jimmy Garoppolo threw 8 passes that day. And they beat Green Bay 37-20. So can an average quarterback get you into the Super Bowl or win you a Super Bowl? Of course. History is filled with guys like that. But by and large, if you're going to play the odds, if you're going to go for the most likely probable outcome of a game, chances are you're going to go with the better quarterback. And Matthew Stafford is the better quarterback. And Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't have a single playoff game in his career in which he's thrown more touchdown passes than interceptions. He's really struggled statistically in the postseason. And while the 49ers have the defense to overcome that, and they have the run game to overcome that, if you're going to make me pick a team, I'm going to pick the Rams, because at the end of the day, I think more often than not, elite quarterback play is what separates teams in moments like this, and the Rams have the better quarterback. All those questions we had about Matthew Stafford, can you believe that was just like a week and a half ago that we were wondering whether Matthew Stafford could thrive in a moment like this? Yeah. Nobody brings that up anymore about that guy.
No, because he proved himself. Yep. 2 playoff games, he's been unbelievable. He's completing 75% of his passes. He looks great. I mean, he's past that. It was a question. It wasn't a definitive. It wasn't there's no way Matthew Stafford. It was just a question. He had been in Detroit. He had never won a playoff game. He had a terrible record against teams with a winning record. I mean, it was more of a, can he do this? More than a, there's no way he can do it. Look, there's plenty of players we've looked at and athletes, he can't do it. No, he is just not capable of doing that. With Stafford, it was more of, I don't know if he can or not. His track record hasn't been very good, but he was with Detroit. He was never favored to win any of those playoff games that he lost, and he was with one of the worst organizations in sports, and that may have led to why the record is so bad. So I think with Stafford, it wasn't a definitive, he can't do this. It was more of a, I don't know if he could do it, but he's proven himself over the last two games. It's water under the bridge.
Yeah, and it certainly has been. And like you mentioned earlier, the way OBJ has integrated himself in the system, he has now caught a touchdown in 6 of the 10 games that he's played since joining LA. He's caught 10 of his 12 targets in the playoffs. Von Miller, at least 1 sack in 6 straight games. Those two guys, who at the time I wasn't sure they were really going to help Los Angeles, they are helping Los Angeles big time. Now, we come in here and the 49ers have won. It will be an ultimate testament to Kyle Shanahan versus Sean McVay. It will be a testament to Jimmy Garoppolo's ability to thrive in these situations. And if it happens, it will be crazy to think, but Jimmy Garoppolo, 2 Super Bowls that he will have taken the 49ers to over the last several years, and yet they might be willing to part ways with him. They probably will part ways with him in the offseason, which is crazy to think about, but is kind of the plan, how they drew it up in San Francisco. Win as many games as they can with Jimmy G, and when the season's done, hand it off to the guy that they gave up all those draft picks to in Trey Lance. I don't think it would change the plan. Maybe it would. But
what if they won the Super Bowl and he played great in the next two games?
Okay, and that's a great question. If they win the Super Bowl and Jimmy Garoppolo plays great in those two games, you gave up all of those picks for Trey Lance. Do you turn your back on that plan and stick with Jimmy G? Think about how much of your future.
I would say no. I would say there's enough proof that Jimmy Garoppolo is, you know, an average to good quarterback. And he's hurt a lot, but he does play well at times. But you did invest all of that. If you believe in Lance, now you've had Trey Lance for a year. You've had a chance to know him. You've had a chance to see him in practice. You've had a chance to see him in some games. If for some reason you're like, you know what? Really not sure about this guy. Well, then maybe that changes your thoughts on Garoppolo.
Yeah.
But if you have seen enough of Trey Lance, like, he's definitely the guy, well, then you clearly move on.
Text us your thoughts on everything that we've been talking about, anything that we've been talking about here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The FanDuel text line is available to you right now at 620-620. When we come back from the offseason to right now, so many conversations about DeAndre Ayton's value and how much he's worth and how much he means to the Suns. He got validation from the players, and we'll tell you how next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
...98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
As we mentioned yesterday here on the Burns and Gambo Show, there are 3 components to how a player can be named an all-star starter in the NBA. And obviously Devin Booker wasn't named one, and Chris Paul wasn't named one, and there wasn't a ton of outrage about it, at least on our show. I saw some on social media. But Gambo, as we've covered many times, social media is often exactly where there's a lot of outrage about everything. So we're not going to get too caught up on how pissed off people were about it on Twitter that Devin Booker wasn't named a starter. The 3 components, there's a fan vote, there's a player vote, and there's a media vote. The fan vote is 50%. The player vote's 25%. The media vote's 25%. One of the really interesting things that come out of the voting yesterday wasn't that a son was named a member of the All-Star team. It was looking at the player vote. What do your peers think about you? What do your peers think about how good you are? And this isn't even a conversation about Devin Booker. This is a conversation about DeAndre Ayton. He got 42 votes among players as a guy who should be a starter in the front court for the Western Conference. That's more than Anthony Davis. That's more than Paul George. That's more than Karl Anthony Towns. Now, Anthony Davis missed a lot of games. Paul George has missed a lot of games. But DeAndre Ayton's missed a lot of games, too. And it's obvious he's getting some love from his peers when it comes to his play this year.
And you wonder, with all the games he's missed, if he had just played in all of these games and been healthy all year long, like how much more he would have gotten. He'd very likely be an all-star. I mean, listen, he was very dominant throughout the season. He's been very dominant with what he does. And I think he would get even more love. But there is definitely a respect factor for how he plays the game. And we really got a hint of that last year with what Nikola Jokic said about him, if you remember, going up against DeAndre Ayton. And I think as these teams play him, they understand that he's a force. He's a force defensively. He moves his feet well. He's really good on screens. I mean, he's great around the basket. He hits his free throws. There's a lot to like about his games. And these players that go up against him and play him, they understand that. They go through game plans beforehand, and they know, you know, that he is a difficult matchup for guys. So I think that's part of the reason he's getting all this respect.
Yeah, look, and we're not going to sit here and suggest for a second that this respect is not deserved. We've raved about DeAndre Ayton. We raved about him all last year. We went nuts on him in the postseason with how he consistently, game in and game out, showed up for every single contest. And did he have a couple bad games? Yeah, he did. But for the most part, it was a real coming out party for DeAndre Ayton, to the point where we were stunned when he wasn't made a max contract. But you're right. I think players know, players recognize that a two-way player like DeAndre Ayton, a guy who excels offensively and defensively, is a talent to be recognized, and praise needs to be given, whether it's Nikola Jokic, whether it's the player vote. I think some of it has been minimized because we haven't seen a lot of DeAndre Ayton this season, especially recently. He's been hurt. And number two, because it seems like the Suns have gotten this point, Gambo, where it doesn't matter who they play at center. That guy is going to come up with some really good numbers and play well. And that, unfortunately for Ayton, it's minimized his impact. I don't know if that's fair or not, but it's a thing, right? I mean, it's minimized what we think about Ayton because Biombo's played so well, or because McGee's played so well.
I remember a game vividly that Amari Stoudemire kind of didn't play, and he wasn't really hurt. I think he just wanted to make a statement about, you know how much they needed him. And the Suns won. Like, they went out there and they won without him. And it's like, oh, it backfired on Amari. I don't know if you remember that, but I totally remember that.
No, I don't remember that game.
Yeah, that was totally a game where Amari just, he didn't play, and he was healthy, and he just came up with some excuse not to play, and I think he wanted to kind of make a statement and stuff like that, and they ended up winning. And it is hard to, you know, you look at this, and it's fair, right? It's fair to say, God, do you really invest all that money in DeAndre Ayton? No, I think you do. Like, he was the number one overall pick. He's a dominant center. He's extremely young. He's only going to get better. So I invest in him. And I think that if you took DeAndre Ayton, JaVale McGee, and Bismack Biyombo, and you forecast it a year later, and there's no Chris Paul, or 2 years later, I think DeAndre will have such a bigger impact than those guys could have. McGee is a perfect backup center. He is a perfect shot blocker. He goes after everything, and he plays with energy. And his offensive game has definitely surprised me. But I still think that DeAndre has incredible upside, and that going forward, that he brings a lot more than either of those other guys do.
Yeah, it's a question of the value of the position itself in some regards, too. I mean, how many conversations have we had about running backs in the NFL, and not that it's a direct one-to-one correlation with centers in the NBA, but some people might suggest that it is, that centers themselves, especially if you can literally get one off of, you know, a guy who was sitting at home 3-4 weeks ago in Bismack Biyombo, and he comes in and puts up the numbers that he does. Now, let's see if he does it long-term. Let's see if he does it for a multiple number of weeks. I still think they should pay DeAndre Ayton too. I think, being that he's 22 years old, there's still so much room in his game for growth and how much more he can accomplish. But I will admit, it kind of paints this picture, fair or not, that makes you wonder how good he really is. To the point where we asked Kevin Pelton about it earlier, NBA insider for ESPN. We love having Kevin on. And he said, you know, frankly, the way Biyombo's playing and the way JaVale McGee's playing is kind of backing up the argument I had for not giving Ayton the max back during this last summer.
I mean, if I'm being honest, this is why I didn't think that a max extension was a no-brainer for him back in the fall. I mean, my conclusion on the day they didn't, you know, come to terms on that extension was I still probably would have done it, because I think the risk in terms of, you know, potentially losing him or at least having him on a much less favorable contract this summer wasn't quite worth it. But you can totally understand why the Suns came to the conclusion that they did. I don't think any of those guys are going to entirely replace DeAndre Ayton in a playoff setting, because, you know, his ability to take advantage of mismatches on switches and, you know, his defensive versatility is still an element that just isn't there with those players. But yeah, it is, I think, why you would want to take a little bit of a discount about DeAndre Ayton's offensive improvement once Chris Paul arrived. It's not just Chris Paul. It's also, you know, the pick and roll system that Monty Williams has installed, and, you know, all the shooting and the actions on the weak side to keep defenses occupied. But definitely the Suns have pretty conclusively shown this is about as favorable a setting for a center as you could possibly find.
Right. And you know what you got to do? You got to anticipate, okay, when you don't have that point guard there, when you don't have him here, you know, what? You know, do you need the dominant center? And I think you do. I think it still sets the tone for you defensively. I think it still anchors your defense and helps the team get out and transition and run. And so I do think it's just so important to have that guy. And, you know, DeAndre's young. It's just a question of money. I mean, if you feel like he's only going to take – look, they would have loved to have signed him to a deal that wasn't a max contract.
Sure.
But, you know, he wants to be paid. You know, for DeAndre, it's a lot about, you know, he wants the respect from his peers. He wants that respect from his peers. And the Suns weren't about to give that to him. They don't care about that. The Suns have no interest in respect from peers. And, again, if the extension would have been to their advantage, they would have done it. But it wasn't to their advantage. So they're going to wait this thing out.
Yeah. Something else Kevin said in there while he was busy making the case, and it was a good one for, hey, this is kind of why I didn't really want to pay him last year. The thing that we can't forget about DeAndre Ayton, and we mentioned it earlier, was how good he was in the postseason. That's not to say that JaVale McGee wouldn't be good in the postseason or Bismack Biyombo wouldn't be good in the postseason, but he's absolutely right about DeAndre Ayton. He proved that no matter what type of team you were playing, he was never a liability on the floor. When the Nuggets played big, he could play big. When the Clippers played small, he could play small. When he was playing against the Bucks, yeah, Giannis kind of had his way against him. But if you've seen the numbers of how Giannis did when Ayton wasn't on the floor, it was total domination. At least Ayton kind of slowed him down a little when he was on the floor compared to the other guys the Suns were throwing at him. So I would to say to everybody, and myself included, is for as much as you want to say, hey, maybe it really doesn't matter who the center is for the Suns because every guy who shows up plays really well. That's great in the middle of January against the Minnesota Timberwolves. That might not fly in the middle of May against the Utah Jazz, right? Or against the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Ayton might very well prove his value in that moment, just like he did last year during the playoffs.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, they played without Paul in some playoff games, right? I don't remember sitting here saying, oh, look, DeAndre Ayton can't play in those games. So, like, DeAndre was really good in the playoffs. He was really good. I mean, he was, you know, fantastic at times against the Lakers and Denver and the Clippers. And you know, early against Milwaukee, I mean, the first game against Milwaukee, he had 22 points and 19 rebounds.
Yeah.
Like, 22 points and 19 rebounds in that game. Now, obviously, you know, there's a lesson to be learned from, you know, what happened in the last few games. But, again, at his age, to me, the sky's the limit. I keep him, but it's not my decision, right? James Jones will ultimately decide how he wants to build this team.
Yeah, I would keep him, too. As far as when he's going to return, Monty spoke pregame today, said he had no update on DeAndre Ayton. He hasn't done any on-court work yet, which I thought was kind of interesting. I know you have been targeting Sunday as a possible return. I don't know if that's changed or not, but Monty did specifically say there's been no on-court work done yet by Ayton. Jay Crowder, JaVale McGee, they have taken some steps. Crowder had a decent workout yesterday, but they're being cautious. So we'll see. It doesn't seem like, with the way they're playing, you can understand why. There's not a ton of urgency to rush any of those guys back. But we'll see. We'll see when Ayton is able to come back. I know in the back of our minds we'd kind of been targeting Sunday. I still am, but it was a little curious what Monty had to say about him today that he hasn't done any on-court
work
yet.
Yeah, I said the other day, listen, I don't expect him back for this game. There was two games coming up. I mean, the thought process was he would be back for Sunday from the Suns. There was a feeling that they felt that he could be back for Sunday. But I know I had basically ruled out this game against, you know, this game tonight against Minnesota, targeted Sunday. today's Friday. If he, you know, maybe they hold him out. Maybe he doesn't play in that game on Sunday. But I know that was a target date in which they thought there was a chance he could play.
Sammy Hagar and George Thorogood are heading to the Auction Pavilion for their Crazy Times tour. And you can win a pair of tickets right now by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. In a decade, we could look at the two quarterbacks who are facing off Sunday in the AFC Championship game and still be talking about two of the greatest of this era. But first, they have to play each other with a right to go to the Super Bowl. We'll talk AFC, Burrow, Mahomes next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
All right, time for the What's On Tonight, the games we're going to be watching this evening. And there are a couple of the local teams that are in action. Obviously, the Suns. We just got done talking about them a second ago. Taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves, 7 o'clock tip time. And it's the reason why we've got bonus Burns and Gambo coming up until 6:30. Gambo and I will be on the air right up until the pregame coverage for that game. So Suns, Timberwolves at 7. The Boston Bruins in town taking on the Coyotes. That's also a 7 o'clock face-off, and you'll hear that one on ESPN 620, the first of a back-to-back set at home for the Coyotes. Tomorrow they're at home against the Buffalo Sabres, if I remember right, correct?
Yes, Boston and Buffalo back-to-back. And I'm you finished your did you finish your show?
I did.
You got a new one you watching yet or no?
No, I just stayed up late to watch the one last night. Didn't start anything after that. I
got a new one I started, but it's all in Italian. So it's on Netflix. You wouldn't be able to watch it. But it's a Sicilian murder mystery called Framed.
Framed?
Yeah, it's a Sicilian murder mystery. It's like a comedy / murder mystery type thing. But the whole thing's in Italian, so. It'd be very, very hard for you to follow.
Subtitles? Do I have subtitles?
I guess you could put I would.
Yeah,
think you could put subtitles on.
Look, Gambo, I probably shouldn't admit this out loud, man. I watch subtitles with everything when I watch TV.
I watch subtitles with a lot of things too. I do,
just because I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss. Now it's a trick, because if you're not careful, you'll read the TV, right? You won't watch TV, you'll read TV. And your eyes will just naturally go down to the words the whole time, and you're not looking at what's on the screen. But I find a lot of the times, if I don't have the subtitles on, I'm like, wait, what'd that guy say?
What'd they say?
Wait, what? Huh? Because I don't want to miss anything, right? I don't want to be and it probably makes me sound like a really, really old guy, and I'm trying not to. But man, if I don't have the subtitles on, I don't want to miss anything in case they say something important.
I would think that there's subtitles available. I watched one episode of it last night. I didn't have the subtitles on, but I would imagine you could put the subtitles on this. It's a Sicilian murder mystery on Netflix
called Framed. Okay,
yeah, it's a little bit of a comedy. It's pretty funny.
Is it? Does Chelsea watch it with you, or because she doesn't speak Italian?
No.
She doesn't.
No, she doesn't even know if she's married.
I'm sorry.
Remember, our wedding was complete. Our wedding, we got married in Italy.
I'm sorry? What?
Like, she might not even know. Like, I mean, I know, but the whole wedding was in Italian. Like, the whole thing was in Italian.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because you got married in Italy, and
she
because the person who was overseeing your wedding was speaking Italian, she absolutely has no idea what she actually agreed to that day.
No, the mayor of Lake Como oversaw our wedding.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So, but, you know, she... Like the whole thing was done in everything was done in Italian, so nothing was done in English. She had no idea what was said.
I was so confused. I'm like, she doesn't know that she's married to you,
like,
right
she
now.
Could, like, my joke is like, she could not be married. Like, I could have set the whole thing up to not be married, like, and she wouldn't know.
Boy, wouldn't that be devious? That's a show in and of itself, right there. Right, a man who tricks a woman into marriage, but that isn't actually a marriage. You know, yeah. All you agreed to do was to do the laundry every other week. You know, that's all the guy said, right? I mean, boy, that's a show in and of itself, right there.
Jeez. Yeah, she goes, I want a divorce. We're not even married.
We're not even married.
What are you going to get a divorce?
Well, that's not what's on tonight, that show about a marriage that didn't happen. But we got some local sports teams in action tonight, and of course you might watch something else as well. This weekend, certainly there's plenty to watch on Sunday, and you better believe it when we come back in here on Monday. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl matchup. We're going to know it. It's going to be all set. We've already talked about the NFC title game a couple times today. San Francisco versus Los Angeles. That's the second game of the day. The first game of the day, which starts at 1 o'clock Arizona time, is Kansas City versus the Cincinnati Bengals. We've already established that we're both rooting for the Bengals in this game, but for different reasons. Why are you rooting for Cincinnati in this game?
You know, they've never won a Super Bowl.
Okay.
I mean, they've been there, but they've never won it. I mean, I'd like to see, I mean, I want to see that Kansas City. I don't dislike Kansas City. I like rooting for Kansas City, but I, you know, Buffalo's never won a Super Bowl, so I was rooting for Josh Allen and Buffalo. I like Burrow, but I like the, you know, the underdog role of Cincinnati's never won one, and let's see him get one.
I really like Joe Burrow, and that's, I'm rooting for Cincinnati. The new blood element, that's kind of cool, especially for Cincinnati, man. That's been one of the most maligned organizations in the history of organizations, man. They've just not had a lot of success there at all, especially recently. But I find myself, there are certain quarterbacks I just really like watching play. I really like watching Joe Burrow play. He's got every single skill you would ever want. He's got the arm strength. He can make every single throw. He sees the field very quickly. He makes his reads very quickly. He decides and processes very quickly. And beyond that, man, there's just a swag that the guy has. There's just a confidence that the guy has. And I don't know if it's dancing in the locker rooms or smoking big fat cigars after championship games or playoff games. There's just something about the confidence he exudes. I really like watching him play quarterback. He's a lot of fun. So I root for that. I root for him and Ja'Marr Chase. And I swear right now, if I could buy a jersey of any player in the NFL right now that wasn't an Arizona Cardinal, it might be Ja'Marr Chase.
It would be him.
It might be Ja'Marr Chase. That kid is incredible what he's done this year. It might be the one jersey I would buy.
You sent me something today, man. When you look at just those three, right? And it didn't even have Mahomes. It was Burrow, Herbert, and Josh Allen.
Yes, correct.
And that doesn't even have Patrick Mahomes in it. Those three young studs, right now, I think I would take Josh Allen over anybody. Would you take Allen over? No, I'd probably still, would you take Mahomes or Josh Allen?
If I'm including Mahomes in the conversation,
yeah.
I'd take Mahomes. But the story was on The Athletic. And like you mentioned, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Justin Herbert, which one would you take? If we put Mahomes in the conversation, I'm taking Mahomes. If we go with the original question and I'm picking from those three, I'm probably, honestly, taking Joe Burrow only because I do wonder about Josh Allen and if he is going to break down because of all the hits that he takes. I do wonder about that a little bit because he's such a physical runner, right? He's not protecting himself the way Kyler Murray protects himself. Josh Allen invites contact sometimes.
Yeah,
and he's bigger.
And he's bigger, and you think he can handle that, but eventually that's going to catch up to him. If I had to pick those three, I would probably pick Joe Burrow over the other two.
Just think about the quarterbacks in, you know, just in the AFC. I mean, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, and Justin Herbert. And look, Trevor Lawrence may end up being really good if they get their act together in Jacksonville. He may end up being great. I mean, he was a number one overall pick. But, you know, I guess it's easy to say out of the four, I take Justin Herbert last. But he's freaking good.
He's so freaking good.
He's so good. And, like, I take him and I take you. That's why I think the NFC and Kyler Murray, man, you've got, like, maybe Justin Fields will be okay. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe Trey Lance will be okay. Maybe.
Maybe.
You know, like I just think that there's this a lot of unknown in the NFC. Murray's got the most known wow factor so far.
Yeah.
But nobody's taking Murray over Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and maybe not even over Justin Herbert right now. Maybe not. But you're going to take him over, you know, the Philly Jalen Hurts, and you're going to take him over Fields, and you're going to take him, I think you might even take him over Dak. So I think being in the NFC, and I've said this a few times to you, I think being in the NFC is almost a blessing because they don't have the level of quarterback play in the NFC that there is in the AFC.
Yeah, it wouldn't seem to be the case. Absolutely not. All right, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, and yes, it's true, we're not done here on the Burns and Gambo show. Bonus Burns and Gambo on this Friday night. We've got a Suns game coming up. Pre-game coverage at 6:30. And our good friend from the Suns broadcast team, John Bloom, has agreed to come by, and we'll just talk a little Suns basketball with him. That's next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You're still here?
Well, duh.
It's not over. Don't go home.
It's Bonus Burns and Gambo. Bonus.
This is brilliant.
It's Bonus Burns and Gambo. Yeah, we're still here, and we'll be here till 6:30.
This is great stuff.
Are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
Bonus Burns and Gambo is just a code name for the John Bloom Show. That's what we've decided.
Huh.
It seems like if we're going into a Suns game and we've got Bonus Burns and Gambo because we're on until 6:30. And yes, it's Bonus Burns and Gambo. We've got a Suns game at 7 o'clock. It means we're on the air until 6:30. I don't want to totally make a habit out of this all the time. But because he's such a good friend of ours, and because he does such a good job when he's calling Suns games, when they're on the road, or when he's in the pre- or the post-game show, John Bloom is such a good guy, such a good, good guy, for agreeing to spend some Bonus Burns and Gambo time with us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I can hear the stuff going on in the background, so I assume we're connected to the arena. Hello, John Bloom.
Hello, Dave Burns. And you know what? It's good because I didn't have any sweets back in the Al McCoy media room yet. And so I waited, and you just gave me all the sweets right there. So thank you. I don't need to feed the sweet tooth now because it came in an audible version courtesy of my buddy Dave Burns.
Wow.
Hey, this should be a fun game tonight. I know Minnesota played last night, and obviously they can't be thrilled with the schedule makers right now because this is as tough of a two-step as you'll ever have to make. Go to Golden State one night, play in Phoenix the next, but that's what they did, and that's who they have to play, and the Suns need to take advantage of that.
Yeah, Minnesota is in a playoff position right now. They lost to Golden State last night. They were terrible. They bombed away from three-point range. They just couldn't make any shots. But this team, you know, with Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, and I don't know if D'Angelo's playing or not tonight. I don't know if you've heard that yet, but they're getting to that point of respectability, almost like where the Suns were that year in the bubble. They're getting to that point of, you know, being a bad team for so long, now there's some respect because they're winning enough games.
That's true. And you talked about Chuck and the threes. That's what they do every game, Gambo. They average almost 42 threes attempted per game. That is the most in the league. Utah's next, and there's almost about a 1.5 shot difference between the two. So the T-Wolves are well ahead of everybody else in how many threes they shoot, but they also shoot them well. And the other thing that they do a lot of, and I heard Monty Williams talking about this before the game, and no update yet on D'Angelo Russell that I can give you officially because we're still waiting for both teams to give us the official lineups for tonight. But he is questionable. I know they've got a handful of people that were listed as questionable coming in, including Patrick Beverley and D'Angelo Russell, the two biggest names in that group. And then, of course, the Suns missing a bunch of people as well. But the thing that I wanted to mention about this T-Wolves team, besides the amount of threes that they get up, is they've got a lot of length and they gamble. They take a lot of gambles trying to get in the passing lanes and get steals. That can sometimes pay off for them. But as you probably saw if you watched last night's game, the Warriors completely took advantage of them during a big stretch where they were gambling a bunch, and a lot of it turned into fast break points and long range threes for those Dubs.
Bloomer, you watch obviously a ton of basketball for what you do for a living. I don't know where he ranks on the fun scale, but it seems to me one of the most fun players to watch in the NBA is in town tonight in Anthony Edwards. The guy is a whirling dervish of entertainment out there in terms of what he brings to the floor. Is there some perspective you can lend to where he ranks on the John Bloom fun-to-watch scale for players in the NBA?
Absolutely. He's rising, I'll tell you that, Burnsy, and probably even flirting with top 10 status. I walked through the tunnel with him tonight, and he's got some pretty awesome Adidas kicks, which are rare. You don't see that a lot, but that's Ant-Man. He's rare. He's a rare breed. I think that's probably the best way I could describe him. Because if you listen to him talk, that description is perfect for that, too. Him in post-game interviews might be my favorite part, although he's a lot of fun to watch play basketball as well, because he gets up and down the floor and up in the air as well. well as anybody in this league. So the Suns will certainly have their hands full with a guy who I'm impressed that he has not really taken a step back after a very impressive rookie season in Minnesota. Anthony Edwards averaging nearly 23 a game here in his sophomore season and improving in a variety of ways, which says a lot, not just about him and his ceiling as a player, but also about the Timberwolves coaching staff. I want to give Chris French and his staff some credit with what they're able to do, because I think that's the way you judge some coaching staffs, is how they develop young talent, and Anthony Edwards fits in that young talent category in droves.
One of the struggles that we've talked about, it is so few, but it just Landry Shamet and his inner. Usually guys come here and they find a way to fit in right away. It's one of the remarkable things about this Suns team and the system with Monty. They encourage you to shoot. It doesn't take a long time to get used to it. Landry's kind of still struggling to find his place with this Phoenix Suns. What are you noticing?
Yeah, I feel the same way, Gambo, that it's about him trying to fit in. And in some cases, the try word is the thing that stands out with me more than anything with Landry. And even on a lot of his shots, when he gets open for a look, it's almost as if he's trying too hard to line it up and aim and fire and shoot. And when he's not thinking as much is when he gets in that flow and you can see the kind of shooter he can be. And he's been an excellent shooter since he got in the league. He was an excellent shooter and a point guard back in college for Wichita State, where he did a lot more ball handling and shot creation for his teammates. But now in the league, that hasn't really been a big part of his game. We were wondering whether we'd see more of that from him, because the coaches talked about that in the offseason. Some of his teammates have talked about his playmaking ability as well. But I think, we're a little over halfway through the season. It's his first season with this group. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and see if he can pick it up and be a second half of the season type of guy, because the Suns are going to need some of those guys. They've had a lot of guys play great basketball through these first 47 games, and now they're going to need some other guys to take their turn, and I would think that Landry Shamet might be ready for his.
You watch every single minute of every single game. I mean, we all do, but you like really watch every single minute of every single game, because you're either calling it or you're doing the pre and the post game show. How that game the other night against Utah, the Wednesday night game, how unique of a game was that from your perspective, in that usually the defining trait, one of the defining traits offensively for a Monty Williams team with the Suns, is the ball movement, is the fact that everybody's getting touches and everyone's getting shots and it's really moving around. And that was not the defining trait with that game on Wednesday night. It was very star heavy. It was very Devin Booker early. It was very Chris Paul late. The number of assists they had as a team was way, way down. And I'm not trying to criticize necessarily.
No.
But from your perspective, how unique of a game was that for the Suns that they rolled out there on Wednesday against the Jazz?
I think for this team, it was very unique, Bernsie, because you look around the league and you will see a lot of ball watching with the teams that have the guys that dominate the ball and take the most shots. But for the Suns, even with ball-dominant guys like Chris Paul and Devin Booker, one of the craziest parts about the way this team operates is they don't ball watch. They move that ball, and they have been a top-five team in assists throughout these last couple seasons, but that game was different. That game was very different. Do I think that it's something that the Suns want to do on the regular? Absolutely not. It's not sustainable to have that kind of usage with two guys carrying that much weight. But I don't think they're going to need to have it be that way for that long. You know, right now I'm watching Jay Crowder get some shots up. He's not going to be back tonight, but I think it's not that long before he returns, at least if I'm reading the tea leaves properly. Hopefully DeAndre Ayton's not that far behind, if he is behind where Jay Crowder is. And then you can start to, take some of the pressure off utilizing those two from a scoring standpoint. But what would really help with the Suns tonight is if a guy like Landry Shamet could pick up some of the slack and get hot off the bench, or if you get a big scoring night from a Mikal Bridges or a Cam Johnson, and it doesn't all have to fall on Devin Booker and Chris Paul. But if it does, the good news is I think they're up to it.
Isn't it remarkable the night in and night out how they just win basketball games?
Yes.
I mean, they got blown out by Miami. That's the last loss that they had. And they've lost some games. But, man, for a team that went to the NBA Finals and the regular season just doesn't mean that much. You just want to go into the playoffs healthy. And, man, they just seem to go out there and want to win every single game. Their mindset to win every game is incredible to me.
It really is. It reminds me of when I used to actually play pickup basketball. And I would sit on the sidelines waiting for my chance to get out and run. And there would be that team that was just loaded that nobody could beat. and you would sit there and go, well, how many straight games is this team going to play? And if they were really good, sometimes they could play all day, or at least it felt that way. That's the way this Suns team seems to me. Like, they can play all day. And it doesn't matter if it's a back-to-back on the road, if they've got to travel, if they're home. This group just loves to compete. It maybe is getting old with some people hearing that, you know, when Devin Booker or Chris Paul or Monty Williams talks about how much they love to play basketball or hoop or do this job that they are all paid to do. But I think it's authentic, and I'm willing to say that after this 47-game start that is unparalleled in the history of this franchise, and who's to doubt that they're not going to continue doing things that we haven't seen this franchise do in the history.
John Bloom joining us from down there at Footprint Center, where the Suns are taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. It's the reason why we're still on the air here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We're taking you right up until 6:30, and Bloom are kind enough to join us for a few minutes to talk a little Suns basketball. Yesterday, I don't know how much you were expecting it, hoping for it. It didn't happen. Devin Booker not named a starter to the NBA's All-Star game. We fully presume he and Chris Paul will be named as reserves a week from right now. In the aftermath of that, I noticed on social media, and of course there's, you know, some grumpy people on social media from time to time.
You think?
But yeah, it happens from every now and then. But one of the suggestions that kind of came out of what happened last night was that there should be no positions for the starters in the NBA All-Star game, that it should just be the five best dudes, because a lot of people were kind of objecting to Andrew Wiggins getting in over a guy like Devin Booker. Is that changing the argument to fit your narrative kind of thing, or do you think that there should be some legitimate thought given to the idea that it's positionless, that you just take the five best guys and you don't worry about where they play and you figure that stuff out later when you fill out your reserves?
Yeah, I think that you know, there's a good argument to be made. And when I start to really think about this, it just hurts my brain. So I stop thinking about it, and I realize that I've never been a fan of popularity contests, Bernsey. I'm a much bigger fan of actual competition. And I think that that can be said about this group of Phoenix Suns. And thankfully, that's the case, because if they really let it get to them, it could get to them. You know, they're the best team in basketball, and it's not close, and yet they don't have a starter in the All-Star game. What kind of nonsense is that? However, if it is going to just be more fuel to this team's fire, I'm all for it. And if it is just a popularity contest, which when it boils down to it, that is exactly what this is.
Yep.
Well, then I think we all just need to take a step back and realize that maybe what we need to do is just lessen the value of where the All-Star game sits in our realm of values and what we consider to have value in our lives, and move on, because we got the best team in basketball playing every home game in front of us, and we're going to get to watch them on another, hopefully, magical run, and even more magical run when it gets to the postseason. So that's where my focus is going to be. Even though I do predict and expect that both Chris and Devin will be on the All-Star team roster. I know I can't say Western Conference All, because it's not West versus East again. And again, that should further identify where we should rank this with importance. It's not even a prideful thing with regards to playing for your conference. It's playing for another dude in the league who's going to pick you in a random draft. So, yeah, that's where the All-Star game sits in my world.
I agree. Listen, I mean, it's a popularity contest. You can't get too high or too low over it. Bottom line is Devin Booker is going to have three All-Star, you know, not appearances because of last year, but three All-Star notches on his belt after this.
Yep. And right. That's something that's important, obviously, when it comes to the end of his career, and you can mention all of them that he's going to eventually rack up over the time. But, you know, when you ask him or you ask Chris Paul about the importance of it, what do they both go to? They both go to the importance of wanting their coach and their coaching staff to represent the Suns at the All-Star game. And if they keep winning games, they're going to lock that up pretty soon.
All right, Bloomer, good stuff. It's always good to hear your voice and connect with you, even though you're down there at the Footprint Center. We will, of course, have you on the show sometime in the very near future. We appreciate the time, man. Have a good weekend. Have a good call tonight, okay?
Hey, you guys have a great weekend. Do we like my Niners' chances? That's what I'm going to leave you with. How about my Niners this weekend?
No. Not really.
No, not so much, defense wins championships. You guys know this.
The only hook to hang that hat on is that they're 6-0 against the Rams in their last six games. And it's a good hook, as Gambo said earlier. That's a pretty good hook to hang your hat on. But, do you really... do you really trust Jimmy G in a moment like this, or does it not matter that Jimmy G is the one you're asking to trust in a moment like this, Bloomer?
I don't know. I think it comes down to Jimmy G. I think, you know, it's really going to boil down to pressuring Stafford, and this defense can do it. And then when Kyle Shanahan goes home and he unlocks the side of Sean McVay's head and gets into his brain and then settles into his bed and goes to sleep, that'll all be nice.
So sometime tomorrow, Kyle Shanahan's going to go down to the bank. He's going to go down to his safety deposit box. He's going to pull out the paperwork that proves that he owns Sean McVay. And he's going to say, okay, you see, Sean, I got the paperwork here.
It's a title.
I got the title on you. Signed documents. It's been notarized legally. I own you. You lose this game so I can go to the Super Bowl. Look, I know this. I'm rooting for your team. Does that make you feel better? I want your team to win. How about that?
Well, yeah, because it's L.A., right? I mean, more than anything, we can all bond over that. We've always bonded over the hatred for that area of the world, and I'm all for that. But you know what? For me, I've always felt spoiled because I grew up a Niner fan. And so that's the one team that I grew up rooting for that actually was a champion. And until the Giants won in 2010, that was really it. And so I always, when people ask me, and I know you guys and I have had this conversation in the past too, like I'd love to see the Lions win for my wife and all those beleaguered fans in Detroit that have never seen anything successful.
It'll never happen.
Right? I know.
It'll never happen.
But now that
you'll be dead
there,
and buried before they win.
I agree. She thinks that more than we
I would bet a car payment that in your lifetime they will never win.
I'm not touching that bet. But I will tell you this, and anybody listening, if you haven't seen the Joe Montana documentary, this thing's given me chills like Last Dance with Michael Jordan did, and I wasn't connected to the Bulls like obviously I am to the Niners, but they did a great job with that thing. It's on Peacock. And I made it through the fifth episode. They keep releasing an episode a week, which is driving me nuts. So there's one more left next week when they'll talk about him going to the Chiefs, and I won't be as into that part of it. But it's been amazing. And, I'd love to see him win again. If they don't, I guess some Lions fans will be happy for Matt Stafford. My wife is not one of them.
Mikal Bridges is not hoping your team wins.
No, he's not. I'm going to go give some trash talk to him on my way back into the back right now.
All right. Well, again, no brownies because we already gave you your love here on the show. Thank you, Bloomer. We appreciate that.
Take it easy, fellas. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Hi, Bloomer.
John Bloom from the Phoenix Suns, one of the voices of the Phoenix Suns, joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. When we come back, we'll loop back to the biggest story of the day. We'll talk about ASU football, plus Cardinal fans, if you've been asking about Larry Fitzgerald, this might be everything you need to know about his future. We'll tell you about it coming up here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
All right, updating the NFL coaching front. We had a little more movement today as one of the jobs was claimed. Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills, now the new head coach of the New York Giants. So that's three of the nine openings that have been filled. Matt Eberflus to the Bears, Nathaniel Hackett, the Packers offensive coordinator, now the head coach of the Broncos. Brian Daboll going to the New York Giants, and some wondering in Buffalo how Josh Allen is going to respond losing his offensive coordinator. I'm not that worried about it, but that's been some conversation. And then, Gambo, this story, and this is the whole reason why I brought up the coaching thing in the first place, in addition to the Daboll news. According to reports, Josh McDaniels is having dinner with the Raiders leadership team on Friday night. And according to a report on the Pro Football Network, that's the one that Trey Wingo works for, according to that, he is expected to be hired to be the Raiders head coach within the next few days. And this specific line from the report, quote, unlike when McDaniels backed out of an agreed upon deal with the Indianapolis Colts, this time he is not expected to get cold feet, close quote, about the job. Apparently he and Dave Ziegler are going to be like a package deal. He's a personnel guy for the Patriots, and the two of them they're going together, and they're going to be a package deal together. And that could happen sometime in the next couple of days.
And then it's going to be a lot of speculation what happens to the OC for Bill Belichick. Does he go back to Bill O'Brien, who was just the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Alabama? Like, who does he reach out to? Because, you know, he's got that You know, and you know, it's crazy when you look at Belichick's coaching tree. Not a lot of those guys, you know, have had this crazy success in the NFL. They just haven't.
Hardly any of them have had any success.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a lot of, like, yeah, Joe Judge is available now. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator for him. Could he go back to Joe Judge? Does he go back to Bill O'Brien? I mean, there's a number of guys that, you know, that he's familiar with, that he likes, that he could just bring back and hire as the new OC.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, a guy like Brian Flores, who I thought would certainly land, and he still might. There's still six openings left, but you haven't heard that name a whole lot. He's a former Belichick guy. He had success. He's one of the few guys who left New England and had success with his new team in the Miami Dolphins. Haven't heard a lot about him yet. That might change, but up until this point, haven't heard anything about him. And then here's another one. According to a report on the NFL Network, Josh McCown is getting his second interview with the Houston Texans today. It is believed that McCown is the only candidate to get a second interview with the Texans, and that's typically a good sign that he's going to get the gig. He doesn't have a lick coaching experience, not a lick. Maybe he's done some volunteer work at the high school level, but that's about it, Gambo.
Man, they want to hire him so bad. Doesn't it seem like they want to hire him?
Yes. Like we don't care. We know. We get it. It doesn't matter. We like that guy. We love that guy. That's our guy. It does. Right. It seems like they are obsessed.
So hire him. If that's the guy, if you think that's the guy, hire him.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I think they were hoping that somebody else would show some interest in him. But, you know, he wasn't on anybody's radar. He wasn't one of the – he'll be one of those guys that kind of just got the job and just based on – you know, without working his way up the ladder, right? No offensive coordinator, no coach. He just retired from the league like last year.
Yeah. And speaking of the National Football League, in case anybody has been holding out any kind of hope, I don't know why you would, based off of what we saw last year with Larry Fitzgerald, on his LinkedIn page, which is a social media website that is like Facebook, but for business connections and work connections. Larry Fitzgerald's profile, and somebody took a screenshot of it. Larry Fitzgerald Jr., investor, philanthropist, former athlete.
Ooh.
I think that's not that we needed a sign. But, Gambo, I seriously think that might be the closest thing you get to a retirement speech from Larry
Renowned
Fitzgerald.
Pickleball player Larry Fitzgerald.
He does love the pickleball. Have you ever played pickleball before?
You know what?
I never
Not
have.
Not really, but I am close. Like, I know so many people that play.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So many people. So, like, I don't know. So, I think that I'm close to, like, I think at some point I may play.
I don't know a soul who plays pickleball.
Really?
No.
God, I mean, there's so many people that play. My YMCA, they go Tuesdays and Thursdays, they have like open pickleball courts. I've never played, but I know they have that. But I'm telling you, I know a lot of people that play. They love it. They absolutely love it.
I had no idea. I didn't know you knew people. I don't even know how to play.
My kid went to the gym once to go shoot baskets and some of his friends, and they were playing pickleball. The basketball courts were all closed, right? So the old ladies were like, do you want to play pickleball with us? And they were like, all right. So three, you know, 12-year-olds, they all grabbed and they played. And those little ladies were kicking their ass, man. They were just kicking my. My son played with some later lady, Dolores or Dorothy or something, and they were what was the name of the lady you played with? Yeah, pickleball. Phyllis. And Phyllis were kicking everybody's ass.
I'll take old lady names for 200, yes. Alex. Dolores.
Him and Phyllis were, man, they were crushing everybody. Yeah, him and Phyllis. Like, he ended up with like a 75-year-old lady. She was great. Like, she was really good.
Phyllis, that really is an old lady name, isn't
it?
Yes, that's an old lady name right there.
He teamed up with Phyllis. They went up against two friends, and they clobbered them.
Doris,
you take that. I got Phyllis. I got Phyllis.
Dolores,
who you got? I got
Phyllis,
him. I got Phyllis.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's so funny.
Phyllis is like the first pick when you go to pickleball. Just look for somebody named Phyllis. And you've got to pick, hey, who do you want your party to be? You take the 70-year-old lady named Phyllis. She's yours.
Do you need a racket to play? I don't even know. Do you need?
Yeah.
Pickleball racket? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. All right. You know what? Maybe more investigation is required. Maybe there's pickleball to be played. I'm not sure. We'll see. That's going to do it for us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. We are out of here. We'll see you Monday at 2 o'clock.
Have a great night, everyone. Goodbye to you.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.